everyone should feel safe at work. And more importantly than that, everyone should just be safe at work. There should be no question about this in your mind. And I mean this in two different ways. One is on the fundamental kind of health and safety level, like the building should be safe, the, like I said, with the processes, the working hours should be safe, people's well-being should be looked after in that kind of tangible sense. But also psychological safety is a big one that people are luckily talking about increasingly now. More and more we're talking about psychological safety, especially when it comes to diversity, equity and inclusion, which I'll talk about in a second. But everybody in your company should feel safe coming into work. There should be no question of things like bullying and harassment. Like, these things do go on, and we don't like to admit that they do. Welcome to Mind Over Grind, the podcast that explores mental health, well-being and business for people who sometimes struggle with all three. I'm your host, Alice Lyons, and through running my well-being company and coaching business, I've spoken with hundreds of professionals just like you who think they're doing business wrong. Being in business can suck, but it's a lot more bearable when we have unfiltered conversations around the process. So join me and my guests as we discuss how to work well, stay sane, and maybe even have fun while we're doing it. This episode is brought to you by Dark Coffee, getting you and your team firing on all cylinders with unfiltered mental health and well-being. Because when you feel great, you'll do great things. Hello, you lovely thing. Welcome back to Mind Over Grind. Today, I wanted to do a episode I've been thinking about for a really long time, but it's taken me a while to distill everything down into 10 points. Today, I wanted to bring you 10 fundamentals of workplace well-being. We can talk all day about how expansive the idea of well-being is and how different people, it'll mean different things to different people, it will manifest in different ways, and everything gets more and more complicated the bigger your company is and the more people you have. But I do think there are certain principles that come up again and again in the training that I do, the conversations that I have. All these lines of correlation and these patterns start to emerge, and as I've been in the field for a few years now, I thought it was probably about time that I distilled some of my learnings down into some key points that I could communicate to you all. So I'm going to try and be as succinct as I can today and bring you these 10 fundamentals that you should have in place to ensure workplace well-being. Now, note how I don't say 10 quick fixes, I don't say the quick start guide to workplace well-being, and that was very deliberate because a lot of these things, some of these are kind of themes and principles we should follow, but some of them are quite extended and long-term ambitions that we should have for our companies. So I'm not promising that things will change overnight, but what I am saying is that these will give you the starting points for the things you should be looking at. So wherever you fall on the kind of team well-being scale, whether you think you're doing an amazing job right now, whether you think you're doing a terrible job, I hope this list will help you to identify those areas that you can really work on and maybe celebrate those areas that you're doing really well as well. So let's get into it. First and foremost, well-being is about two things: your people and your processes. What do I mean by this? So obviously, when we're talking about workplace well-being, what we're talking about is the well-being of the individuals within your organization. We're talking about things like forming a positive culture, giving people the support they need, the tools and the direction to do their jobs. But if you think about all of these things, it's not just about the people showing up and us having soft and fluffy conversations with them. Giving them the tools to do their job, that falls into the processes category. We need to, you know, this is something I see a lot in workplaces, is they'll sometimes come in and get people like myself to come in and deliver a well-being service, and they think, oh, that's great, we're looking after people. But then if you're sending people back into a job which they're unqualified for or understaffed in, or they're working every hour under the sun and they're told to take a break, but if they do, they get stressed out because they can't keep on top of their workload, that's not conducive to a healthy person, and that therefore is not conducive to a healthy culture, especially if you times that by the number of employees you have. So first and foremost, you have to have a think about not just your individuals and how you can support them and what kind of support they need, that is important and we'll come to that in a minute, but also you should have a really long, hard look at your processes. How is your company actually running right now? What kind of things do you have in place? I really like that in France they have a policy where you're not allowed to contact people out of hours. I think it's actually illegal now, and you can, as an employer, be prosecuted. I think I'm right in saying that. But either way, it's a very much a cultural no-no. You do not email people out of hours because they're entitled to time off. They're entitled to rest and recovery time and, you know, family time, work-life balance, all those sexy things that we dream of in the UK, but many of us don't have. What are your processes? And how are these things communicated as well? A lot of times we might think, oh, you know, we have this policy in place to support people. We have this flexible working policy that we brought in after the pandemic and stuff. And it's cool for you to have those things. It's amazing to have those things. But is everyone in the company aware that they have it? Are they all aware that they have access to it? If they want to access those policies, how do they approach that with their line manager? Is it something that's brought up in a review? Is it something that the individual would have to approach their line manager about? Or are the line managers creating opportunities to have those kind of conversations? So the first point is, well-being is about your people and your processes. Point two, none of these, by the way, are in a particular order, but this one is very, very important. So I did want to mention it very early on in the episode in case anybody doesn't listen to the whole thing. Everyone should feel safe at work. And more importantly than that, everyone should just be safe at work. There should be no question about this in your mind. And I mean this in two different ways. One is on the fundamental kind of health and safety level, like the building should be safe, like I said, with the processes, the working hours should be safe, people's well-being should be looked after in that kind of tangible sense. But also psychological safety is a big one that people are luckily talking about increasingly now. More and more we're talking about psychological safety, especially when it comes to diversity, equity and inclusion, which I'll talk about in a second. But everybody in your company should feel safe coming into work. There should be no question of things like bullying and harassment. Like, these things do go on, and we don't like to admit that they do, because it's a horrible thing to deal with. It's horrible to be faced with a situation if you're an HR manager. It's horrible to have to get involved in these really gut-wrenching conversations where people are not getting on a human level. And there's all kinds of levels of complexity that comes to that, of like, oh, this shouldn't be happening, but it is, and how do we deal with it? And people should be able to navigate these difficult relationships because we're all grown-ups here. It can cause a lot of conflict within a team, a lot of confusion around what's gone on, even just excavating a situation to the core of like who said what to who, and is it just one against the other? It's really, really complicated. Like, my hands go up in appreciation to the HR managers that are listening. But this is something that we really do need to take responsibility for. Is our workplace a safe place to ask to work? You can ask people. I was just going to say, a really good way of testing that is to ask people. A lot of people will do a well-being survey maybe once a year. I definitely think it should be more than that. We should be checking in with our people regularly to make sure that they feel comfortable and they feel able to do their job and supported in their development and things. But one of those questions that you should be asking in that survey is, do you feel safe coming into work? And you could even go into more detail of, do you feel that people have your best interests at heart? Do you feel that it's a safe environment for you to be yourself? Even, you know, psychological safety extends to the ability that people have to feel themselves at work. So it's fine to say, oh, we're really inclusive. We're an accessible employer. We welcome people with disabilities. I spoke about this in a previous episode with Rachel Moll. It's fine to say, yes, we welcome people with disabilities, or we welcome people with certain requirements for this job. But do they actually feel like they're welcome there once they get there? Are they given the tools to succeed in their role? And are they made to feel like a valued member of the team instead of a burden? This is something that we hear a lot with people who have adjustments that need to be made for them, and rightly so. And a lot of the time it doesn't take any effort really on the part of the employer, but the insinuation is that person is, you know, oh, we're putting in all this effort for you. It's that can have a real psychological impact on that person. So that's point number two, make sure everybody feels safe at work. The best way to know if they are is to ask them, and ask them in a way that is psychologically safe. So like an anonymized survey, maybe one where they don't have too much space to leave free writing, because sometimes with free writing of like, give us your response, in your own words, it can be very clearly identifiable. So sometimes it's good to get people to fill out a survey where it's like agree, disagree, and then they're given the option to go into more detail if they want to, but don't make that compulsory. Just a side note there. Number three, everyone's voice should be heard. This is kind of tipping into what I was saying about diversity, equity, and inclusion. It is fine to say we welcome people from a diverse range of backgrounds. We are always looking for more ideas. We are always looking to expand in new and exciting directions and blah, blah, blah. You can say whatever the fuck you want in that direction. But if people are sitting at a table where their views are not being acknowledged and they're not being taken into account, then it's bullshit. It is glitter on a turd. It is, it's showboating. Call it whatever you want, but it's not coming from a genuine place. If people feel like they're consistently contributing and they're just being ignored or trampled over, and this doesn't even need to be in a really hostile way. It can just be in the sense of they make a contribution and nothing happens as a result of it. That's a problem. This kind of ties into what I was saying before about psychological safety. A big part of, I think I've told this anecdote before, but it's really stuck with me and it's something that I think is so important, so I'm going to share it again. I spoke with a guy who is the, at the time of speaking with him, he was the director for Samaritans, so the suicide prevention charity. They do lots of other things. They support people in crisis, basically, any kind of emotional crisis or sort of in the moment trauma people are going through. He was an area manager for them. And I asked him, what are some of the things that people have in common when they feel suicidal specifically? And he said, as humans, we kind of want a few basic things. We want to feel seen, we want to feel heard, and we want to feel understood. And if we don't have these things as humans, it can really throw our whole lives into question. It can be really, really dangerous for us because we don't feel on a really primal level like part of the group. We can feel excluded, shunned, underappreciated. It can be really traumatic for us as individuals. So this isn't about pandering to anyone. At an extreme, it can be a life-saving thing just to have someone feel acknowledged in their work and just feel listened to by somebody. But broader than that, if you kind of take it into the context of what a workplace should be and what a learning culture can look like, it's a really good thing to have diverse teams and diverse voices being heard. Because if you have a room full of 10 people who are all the same or, you know, very similar to each other, similar backgrounds and stuff, you're not going to get that many solutions to your problems if you think about it, because they're all going to most likely offer quite similar things, particularly if they have very similar personality traits. So one thing I see is that extroverts can all jump into a conversation, and I see this in group coaching all the time. There'll be certain people in a room who really go at it, give all the feedback, jump in, and they can tread over other people without meaning to. They don't mean to be hostile for the most part, most of them. But this can mean that there are other people in the room who never get heard because if they're the introverts and they're sort of sitting back and they're not in a passive way, but they are just listening to people because that's their natural tendency, then that means very often that they won't be listened to. So it could be that they feel like I'm not contributing, or people are going to think I'm not contributing even though I've got amazing ideas. I'm just not given the opportunity to get into the conversation, or I don't really have the skill set or the confidence perhaps to be able to interject successfully, or maybe they try to do it but they get shouted over, you know. So everybody's voice should be heard, whether that's in a meeting, whether it's in a brainstorming session. Particularly, like I was saying, if you've got very similar personalities in a room, you're more likely to get very similar answers to questions and ideas and creative thinking and things like this. But more diverse teams have been shown again and again and again in studies and just in general observation that they come up with the best innovative ideas, they come up with the most creative ideas, they are quicker to reach a solution quite a lot, because people come at it from 10 different perspectives and then you have more data to kind of waft through more data to sift through and think, oh, that sounds like a good idea, let's try that. It's amazing for innovation and creativity to have these diverse viewpoints. So everyone's voice should be heard, not just because it's good for individuals, but to create a really healthy, really strong workplace culture, you need to give an opportunity to different voices to flourish and to come to the forefront. Number four, managers should be proactive in terms of well-being. This is something that's said so often, and it's true, but people kind of take it at a really basic level of like, oh, managers need to practice what they preach and they need to role model behaviours. And like, in the first instance, I think we need to take that more seriously, because I do not think there are enough managers and leaders who role model the kind of behaviours that they want other people to exhibit. A lot of the time they'll work extra hours, or they'll put themselves in difficult situations, they'll take a lot of burdens for the team, and none of those things is intrinsically bad. I think it can garner a lot of respect, and people can really appreciate the effort that they're going to in those kind of situations. But what I really mean about proactivity is that managers should be creating opportunities for people to feel well and healthy and supported at work. What can that look like? So it's one thing to say that you have an open door policy. This is a bugbear of mine. If you say you have an open door policy, it's a lovely idea. It looks really welcoming. It looks really, you know, you're putting the power on the part of the individuals and stuff, and you look like you're being open to people. But actually what you're doing is you're handing responsibility over to them. And if you imagine you've got somebody who's feeling depressed or suicidal, for instance, like let's say they're going through something really quite delicate and they don't know how to handle it and they're struggling. If you put the onus on that individual to come to you, you're asking them to do a hell of a lot when they're feeling at their worst, when they're feeling at their most vulnerable. You're asking them to put themselves into a position where they're even more vulnerable. So A, what are the chances of them doing that? B, what are the chances of them feeling better for doing that in the first instance, instead of, you know, worried about losing their job or worried about being seen to be ineffective, those kind of things. I love the idea of it, and it comes from such a good place when people offer the open door policy thing. But a better way of doing this, and something that's probably more effective in the long run, is to regularly create opportunities where people can talk to you about how they're getting on. And I don't just mean in terms of like, oh, tell me about your day, tell me about your life outside of work, but have proper detailed development conversations. Like, how often are people able to say, oh, do you know what? I'm really struggling with this at the moment. I could do with having a bigger team around me, or I could do with outsourcing this particular part of my role because I'm not enjoying it. These can be really formal or really informal, whatever works for you. I know I've spoken a lot about coffee chats before, because this is something I used to do when I was managing in coffee shops. We just had like regular 20-minute check-ins with every team member where I could get to know them as people and what they cared about. And a lot of my guys were students, so I knew the coffee shop life wasn't for them. It was a gap filler, it wasn't a career job for a lot of them. But I wanted to know what they wanted to do and what they wanted to be and what they wanted to explore in life outside of work, because A, I'm just super interested and people are fascinating to me. But B, once you kind of know how people tick and what they're motivated by and stuff, it's so much easier to work with them and to know, right, this person likes this particular thing, so I can help them with this. I can give them this support, encouragement, training, whatever it is. You can tailor a job to suit an individual so much better, and this benefits everyone. Of course, a more developed person is more likely to be engaged in what they do, and guess what that brings benefits for the whole team, that brings benefits for clients in terms of their ability to deliver customer service. There are so many benefits to supporting team members, and I know it's one more thing to add to the to-do list. I know managers will be listening and just be like, oh great, yeah, so on top of all of my things I have to do, I have to support my team. But yes, frankly, that is why managers are paid more than other employees. It's because it's a whole different skill set. We need to get away from this obsession people have with promoting people into positions just because they've been there a long time and they're good at their job. Because being technically skilled at something is not the same as being a good leader. It's a completely different skill set. Being able to manage and lead and motivate and course correct people and give feedback, all these soft interpersonal skills, they're really fucking hard, and not everybody has them. So if anybody's in a position where you hire leaders, I suggest you have a look at your team and have a look at the composition of managers and leaders that you've got. And I'm not telling you to sack anyone, but do have a look at the kind of spread of managers that you've got, and just think to yourself, are they all as upskilled as they should be in the art of like interpersonal skills and leading people? And if they're not, maybe that's something you need to introduce, or maybe there does need to be a shifty around in the roles and responsibilities and things. because that should be the one of the biggest parts of their job is to manage and coach and support their people. Number whatever, maybe five. Teams should be involved in any kind of well-being policies and improvements. So as much as I'm saying managers need to be proactive, managers need to be creating opportunities for people, it doesn't stop there. It's not up to one or two people to oversee the well-being of everyone, because in the same way as health and safety, everyone is responsible for maintaining a physical environment and keeping it healthy. It's the same with our well-being, and our well-being stretches into our emotional well-being, our financial well-being, our social well-being. It kind of goes into those areas of our lives that kind of lurk below the surface quite often, but they're very much there in the culture. So everyone needs to take a bit of responsibility for the workplace that they're contributing to. Everyone needs to think about, how am I treating other people? How am I speaking? How am I giving feedback? How could that be affecting people? These are all things we should be regularly reflecting on. Like I was saying with reviews, we should be having regular reviews with people where we talk about not just the practical, are you hitting your targets? Are you meeting your objectives for your role? But how are you meeting those? Not just what are you doing, but how are you working? And how is that impacting the people and the workplace around you? If this is all sounding very complicated, it's because it kind of is. Like, a lot of this is common sense. I'm sure as I'm saying these things, you're like, oh yeah, it's really obvious. But it's also quite big stuff, like trying to get people to be self-aware and not just think about, what am I doing for my benefit? Or even, you know, just not doing the day job without thinking and doing it mindlessly. We need to bring a bit of attention and awareness to what we're doing and how we're doing it, because so much of well-being is communicated and kind of imprinted into a business just through the small day-to-day things. It's not always about getting in a big shiny third party, although hello, I'm one of those if you want to get me in. But it's not about having a program of events. It's not about having all these tag-on things. The well-being of your people in your workplace is written into the DNA of your day. It is in those conversations that you're having every day. It's in the way that you structure your meetings. It's in the way that people communicate with each other and send emails. It's in the respect they do or don't give to each other. That is where true workplace well-being comes from. It comes from the way that we conduct ourselves and treat each other fundamentally. So when it comes to creating a mentally healthy and well workplace, the whole team should be included, and it should be communicated to them that they have responsibility in this. Like I said, exactly in the same way that health and safety is everyone's responsibility. But even if we expand this out into a well-being program and you want to have additional facilities and additional services available, which again, I will get into later, the team should be included in that. So it shouldn't just be a case of a couple of people going off and going, oh, I think the team would really like this thing, and going off and booking a service that no one's going to use. It should be a conversation that's opened up to everyone, and everyone has an opportunity to feedback, because like we said earlier, it's nice for everybody's voice to be heard. But not only is it nice, it's actually essential. So if you're getting feedback from everyone and if you're actively seeking that feedback, you're more likely to get some activities and things in place that people will actually use and that people will benefit from. So get them involved. Number six, actions should be put in place consistently and continually. This is kind of an expansion of what I was just talking about, in terms of it shouldn't, workplace wellbeing isn't about just having a series of events and like a nice program once a year where you kind of look at, oh, this is how to do self-care and this is how to run a bath for yourself. And I'm being flippant, you know, there's so much complication and levels of complexity involved in self-care. But it shouldn't just be a hot topic once a year or once a month or whatever. The actions that you put in place should be continual and consistent. These should be regular conversations that you're having, especially in leadership teams, in the same way that you might review your budget and you'll say, okay, or your sales, you'll look at your sales every month and be like, are we hitting our targets? What do we need to do differently? Blah, blah, blah. You should be having regular conversations about team well-being and welfare, and just even just raising that question of, are we doing enough to support our people? Is this a healthy, happy, and safe place to work? That's a really simple question with potentially a very complicated answer. But it's one that's worth asking on a regular basis. Even if you think the answer is going to be yes, we're doing everything well, why do you think you're doing it well? Have you put anything particular in place? Have you had feedback from your team to tell you that you're doing it well? Or are you making assumptions? This should be on your agenda every day, every week, every month. You should be asking yourself, how can we make this a safe, happy, and healthy place to be for everyone as well? Not just the ones who are noisy enough to feed back to you on a regular basis and tell you what you want to hear. Is this a safe, happy, and healthy place for everyone to be? Number 7, development and... Am I getting these numbers right? I don't know. Another number. Development and progression should be offered to everyone. Again, similar to what we were saying about conversations being had regularly. It's my belief that everyone should be offered career progression. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're promoting everyone, because as I've just said, not everybody is cut out for a role as a manager, for instance. But development and progression within any kind of capacity, even if you stay in a role, there's this human desire to grow, whether we're consciously aware of it or not. All of us want to feel a sense of progress in our lives, because otherwise we can stagnate, we can feel really stuck. It's not a happy place to be. And that doesn't mean we need to be expanding all the time and like, oh, I've taken on loads more responsibility and oh, I'm going in this new direction. Because some people, everybody moves at a different pace. We all have our own kind of cadence that we work to. But the opportunity should be there for people to regularly reflect and just think, am I happy in my role at the moment? Is there something else I'd rather be doing? Or even just to recognize, like, yes, I'm happy where I am. Yes, I'm happy with the level of responsibility and the things I'm doing day to day, I'm really happy with. It's also an opportunity then for them to identify areas of adjustments and things that need to be done, areas of growth or potential change, because they could say, oh, do you know what? I'm not really enjoying this at the moment. It doesn't really feel like it suits my personality or my skill set. Could it be given to someone else? Or could we find a different way of me doing this? Could I figure out a different way where it's done more quickly or more efficiently and it's just kind of off my plate sooner? Regular development conversations and the opportunity for progression should be offered. From a really practical, businessy kind of point of view, it's so much cheaper and easier to promote internally than it is to hire externally. So you're better off nurturing the people that you have and trying to keep them in-house as much as you can rather than going externally. That's not to say that you shouldn't ever hire externally, because there are massive benefits that come from that. People from outside of your company will bring different experiences, different insights, diversity in thinking that we were talking about earlier, that's very important. But being able to retain your team and make them feel valued, there's a lot that can be achieved through progression and through development conversations. This is where my work has kind of niched down more recently. This is really what I think Dark Coffee is about now. We are about supporting people's development and helping them to develop, not just as professionals, but in their personal lives as well, because those two worlds collide more often than we care to admit. And I find it so rewarding. I absolutely adore one-to-one coaching. It's probably my favorite part of my job. But there's something so rewarding about hearing somebody talk about their work and fall in love with it again, or maybe fall in love with it for the first time, or just feel more engaged coming into work and seeing it as this expansive and interesting thing that they get to do. And they're like, oh, not even necessarily like, oh, I can't believe I get paid for this, because that's a bit of a wanky cliche that gets thrown around. But just to have them engage with work in a new way and see it as like a contribution that they're making, not just, oh, I have to go to work and I have to earn a living to pay my bills, which, you know, for a lot of us is the case, but to be able to take that premise and to be able to flip it and reframe it and actually get a sense of enjoyment from their work through seeing, oh, I can express myself in work. I can explore this part of myself and this skill set that I have in a new and a different way that I didn't think was available to me. Development and progression is so undeniably important for the majority of us. There'll be the odd one or two people that don't care, and that's absolutely fine. If it's really a part of their values that they don't really value work, we just kind of have to be okay with that. It's upsetting for someone like me, who is very career minded, but people are people and we've got to respect what they value. But I think you'd be surprised the number of people that do value development and they do want to feel like they're making a contribution. So we have to give them the opportunity to be able to do that on a regular basis. Points, no. Money matters. As much as I'd like to think we live in a world where everybody's doing their job because of love of the job, their vocation, their passion, etc., it's unfortunately not the case. And there's a lot of information going around, especially on social media. There are all these posts about like, oh, you know, do a job you love, you never work a day in your life, and money is not the most important thing. But let's be real, at the time of recording this, we are in a cost of living crisis. We cannot sit there and just blindly assume that money doesn't make the world go round for our people, because a lot of the time it will. Particularly if you've got people in a junior position, or if you've got people in a very expensive city to live in, if you've got people in London and Manchester, it's lazy. It is fucking lazy, and it's really wrong of us to assume that money isn't playing a part in their lives, and a very significant part. This isn't about individuals being bad with money and bad with budgeting. I mean, are people actually being paid a respectable amount of money to live in the city that they live in? Like, that's the first thing we should be asking ourselves. We can't just look at individuals and say, oh, you know, you're wrong to want to have an exceptional lifestyle or anything like that. I don't think there are many people, in the grand scheme of things, if we lined everybody up, it's probably like 10% of people that want a really luxury lifestyle and like go on bougie boat cruises and stuff. I think if you asked all of your team members right at the moment, they just want enough money to not have to think about it. They want enough money to be comfortable. They want to pay their bills. They want to be able to go out and see their friends, have a bit of avocado on toast because it's £6 and everybody seems to think it's the world's most extravagant meal. But they just want to live, damn it. They just want to be able to buy a house at some point. So we can't say that money doesn't matter or money can't buy happiness. It really fucking can, if the alternative is not paying your bills or wondering if you can pay your bills or wondering if you can save up for a mortgage. We need to think about the remuneration we give to people. We need to think about, are we paying them enough to live in this city? Are we paying them enough for their skill set? Is this fair? We should be having regular pay reviews on an individual level, but also on a company level as well. We should be thinking about what are we doing to address the gender pay gap. Is there a gender pay gap in your industry? Are you sure? If you said no, there's no gender pay gap, are you 100% sure on that? Or are you just kind of guessing based on your own salary and someone else? Is there transparency when you recruit people into the company? Do you make salaries widely known? Are people allowed to talk about it? There's this cultural thing in the UK that it's rude to talk about money. Is it rude to talk about money, or are people trying to stop us talking about money because it's more convenient for them if we don't talk about money? You know, there's so many misconceptions around it that we could be breaking down, but it starts with just looking at the team that you've got and the pay that they're given, the basic rate of pay, and thinking, is that enough? And if it isn't, could you redistribute some funds from elsewhere? Because it could be that as a company, you're spending tens of thousands every year on a membership to, in air quotes, a well-being app, for instance, I don't know, and 2% of the workforce are using it. The ones that are using it are thinking, yeah, great, but I could have paid for this myself if I really wanted to use it. And potentially that money could be redistributed into a better pay package so people can pay their rent and, you know, give their kids school dinners and pay for petrol, you know, crazy, extravagant shit, like living a life. It's just, yeah, that's one that I really needed to mention because it should not ever be snubbed. Okay, point 9. Different levels of support need to be available for everyone, available and accessible. So by different levels of support, I've spoken about how the well-being is kind of imprinted into the fabric of your everyday lives. It's about the way you talk to each other. It's about how people are paid. It's about these very everyday kind of things. But there's also a place for external support. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a third party and I want the gig. I'm saying it because we all have different skill sets. And one of the things that you can offer as support to your team is potentially like mental health support, for instance. Maybe you could benefit. I think everyone can benefit from therapy. I'm just going to go out there and say it. Everyone can benefit from therapy. Everyone can benefit from having a safe space to untangle their thoughts. I was just on a coaching call before I came on here, and I was talking to a guy in a company who I do like informal coaching calls with. So they can just book a slot in my diary, just kind of have a chat with me about anything that's bothering them. And he said it was so nice to just have a moment to let his brain stop so that he could unpick it a little bit and he could make sense of it. So that is something that a lot of therapeutic modalities and spaces will do for people, whether that's therapy, counselling. What I do is coaching, so it's much more kind of action driven, and I don't go as deep on particular issues sometimes, but it's more about what information is presenting itself, how are you dealing with things, what can you do differently going forward, that kind of drive to action. And creating those opportunities for people is very, very important. And you can do that two ways. So my final point to make was to have a dedicated team that is working on this. I definitely think you should have a dedicated in-house team. Whether you're a team of two or a team of 2,000, you should have a group of people who are continually pushing the well-being conversation, continually focusing on driving this for your teams. But as well as your in-house team, it can be supremely beneficial to get experts in from elsewhere. I've seen this done so badly in-house sometimes, because sometimes you get people who are really passionate about it and really know their shit and they're brilliant. But other times you just get it kind of clumped in with HR, and you might have a particular HR director that's not bothered or doesn't see it as an issue or doesn't understand it, whatever it is. I went on a mental health first aid training course a few years ago, and that's a whole podcast on how much I hate that shit. But the people that were sent on it, I paid for it myself. I went as an individual, and obviously I'm interested in the area. But so many people went to that day, they got signed off, they got their certificate, and you could just tell they didn't have an empathetic bone in their body. And I thought, these people are going to go back to that workplace. People are going to go to them potentially with really big, difficult situations that they want resolving. And they're going to be faced with this blank wall of don't give a fuck who's not going to help them. And how is that improved? How has that improved that workplace? But the company get the joy of like ticking it off the list and saying, oh, we got mental health first aiders. Is it effective though? Is it effective to have an in-house team who don't want to be there? So yes, have an in-house team, but there's a few caveats to this. Make sure they're interested in it. Make sure they're passionate about it. Make sure they have the willingness to go and do research and actually potentially upskill themselves, or get someone else in who has the skill set to be able to support. And as I say, the levels of support can be completely different. So you could have a confidential phone line that's really good for some people. You could have in-house therapists that come in to talk to people one-on-one. You can have group programs, so people don't feel like they themselves are under a microscope necessarily, but they have these opportunities to bond with their colleagues and find out, oh, those things that I'm struggling with, someone else is struggling with, that's cool. I feel like I'm understood a little bit more. I feel like I can help them. I can focus on their development, and at the same time, I'm developing myself. These are all things that are available when you start thinking about, well, first of all, you have to make the assumption that you need the support. Just say, are people need support to feel safe, happy, and healthy here? And then the next question becomes, what support can we give them? I said earlier on, you can get their involvement, you can get their suggestions. I've been referred into loads of companies by people who just work at a random level. They're not managers necessarily. They just work at some level in the company, and they've followed me online for ages, and then they've referred me in. So the solutions can come from anywhere in your team. You don't know if you're not asking those questions. So those are my big 10 points. Let me just read them through again. Wellbeing is about your people and your processes, so you have to work on both. Everyone should feel safe at work. Everyone's voice should be heard. Managers should be proactive. Teams should be included and involved. Actions should be put in place consistently and continually. Development and progression should be offered. Money matters. Different levels of support need to be available to everyone. And you need to get a dedicated team involved in this, and that includes third parties, as my recommendation would obviously be biased. But I do think it's important that whoever's involved in your wellbeing team has a skill set or has access to a skill set that is maybe above the average level. I really hope you found that useful. As I said, this is 10 fundamentals of workplace wellbeing. I'm not going to say that you can achieve all of this overnight, and I'm not saying any of these things are easy, but I hope that in just having this opportunity to kind of reflect, you might have thought of one or two things that you're like, yes, we can definitely do that better. I would recommend that as your place to start. Start with the areas that you feel are the weakest, and you'll probably see the most improvement, because at the moment, you'll have no idea how much energy is being lost through not having that in place. I always say it's like a leaky bucket. If you have a leaky bucket, if you have a hole somewhere, energy, time, resources are just pouring out. So the quickest way to get any kind of overall improvement is to plug that gap and then build up from there. And then maybe select one or two things that you're doing really, really well and give yourself some kudos for that. Give some recognition to the team. Give some feedback to people of like, we actually do this really well. Maybe double down on some of the things that you're doing really well. If you think you're already pretty good at feedback, improve a little bit more. See what more you could get from that feedback. Could you take some of the feedback and put more actions into place? Could you get more people involved in how to put those actions into place? There are all sorts of ways to do this. I don't want you to be intimidated by this. I hope it's given you a couple of ideas to kind of jumpstart, but I'm here. You know me. If there's anything I can do to support you, just reach out, just let me know. I've got a link in the show notes, which is for a coffee chat, which is a 20-minute conversation with me. If anything that I've spoken about today has like triggered some questions for you and you just want to hash it out with somebody, I'm available for that reason for you. So my coffee chats are not a sell. I'm not there like, oh hey, you definitely need my services in this thing. I genuinely have it there to have open conversations with people. If I think that I could meet your needs in some way, shape or form, I'll ask permission to discuss that with you. But I never trick people onto phone calls for a hard sell because it's just not how I operate. I'm just not that type of salesperson, frankly. So please make use of that if I've got your brainwaves going today. Otherwise, best of luck getting started. Let me know how you get on. Join me on Instagram, LinkedIn, wherever you feel most comfortable. And I'll see you next time. Thanks for listening today, you legend. What was your biggest takeaway from the conversation? Come and let me know over on Instagram by tagging me, Dark Coffee Wellbeing. If you liked what you heard today, then please consider leaving a review so I can reach more people with my downright wisdom bombs. They'll thank you for it, and I will too. Thank you for your ongoing support. Keep on being a badass, and I'll catch you next time.